Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb. And this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 162 of the Leading Learning Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about motivation, and we're going to address motivation in general, drawing on the work of Edward Deci, but also, as you might expect, we'll talk about motivation in the context of learning. But before we turn to motivation, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode.
Our sponsor for this episode is Learning Technology Design. LTD is our annual virtual conference designed specifically for those who work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development. LTD 2019 will be our fourth time offering this virtual conference, and we know from feedback that past attendees have found it to be a unique and highly valuable experience. Registration is open at ltd.tagoras.com, and through these last few days of November, we're offering reduced pricing as well as the opportunity to extend a complimentary invitation to a colleague or friend who has not attended LTD before. We're also offering a patronage opportunity that may interest companies that serve learning businesses. You can find out about being a patron by visiting ltd.tagoras.com/patron, and we'd like to spotlight one of our current patrons, Digitel. Digitel helps clients leverage their content and provides conference content capture, content archiving and distribution, live streaming, webcasts, and more. And you can find out about all that Digitel has to offer at digitelinc.com. That's digitelinc.com.
And we're certainly grateful to Digitel and the other patrons who have already signed on for LTD, as well as all of the learners who have registered to be part of that event with us. And we're hoping that maybe by the time we're done with this episode today, you too, dear listener, will feel motivated to sign up for LTD 2019. And so let's get back to this topic of motivation. And this is it's an important topic. It's a big topic. It's something that we've been tracking and thinking about for years and have been wanting to do an episode about for a long time. So we're glad we're finally getting to that point. And when we think and talk and write about motivation, there is a particular figure that we tend to have in mind, and this is Edward Deci. And Deci is well known as a researcher on motivation, but we specifically tend to reference a book of his that we highly recommend, and that's called Why We Do What We Do, Understanding Self-Motivation. And we'll actually call that an emphatically recommended read, putting it in the vaunted company of books like Blue Ocean Strategy, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, and Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. We feel like Why We Do What We Do is a book that really needs to be in every learning business professionals' library, and not just in the library. It needs to be read. It needs to be marked up. You need to learn the lessons from it, and we'll talk about some of those lessons in this episode.
Yeah, and so that book was first published in 1995, so it's fairly old at this point, but it's definitely withstood the test of time. I mean, where Deci's coming out of is a very research driven background. He's professor of psychology at the University of Rochester, and he is director of the Human Motivation Program there. And so he's spent years studying motivation and really figuring out what it is that makes people do what they do. And, you know, I think maybe we should just start, Jeff, with a high-level look at kind of self-motivation and the three aspects of it that DC emphasizes and that we also see as critical here.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we'll say before even going into that, there's obviously no way we're going to, you know, get into all aspects of this book. It's a very rich book. It is a very readable book, though, and again, something that we highly recommend. But you know, in terms of framing out human motivation in general, kind of the underpinnings of self-determination theory, DC and his research partner Richard Ryan really focus in on three aspects, as you're saying, Salisa, and those are autonomy, competence, and connectedness. And, you know, DC and Richard Ryan feel very strongly that these are the fundamental elements of human motivation. So maybe we can, you know, talk through each of those at least a high level, you know, so that folks understand where we're coming from there. So, you know, autonomy to start out with, really just this idea of being in control. You know, feeling like you as a human being and in our context, obviously, as a learner, have command of your situation, that there's an element of choice there, I think, is incredibly important to that. So, you know, you can think of sort of the classic kid sitting in a classroom in school, just being forced to go through the curriculum, really not feeling like they have much control at all, not feeling that sense of autonomy. And unfortunately, that often doesn't leave as we enter into adulthood. We certainly, you know, have more choice in our lives, but we may feel compelled by our employer, by our economic situation, by just the demands of regulation in whatever industry we work in, to do whatever we do from an education and learning standpoint, and may not really feel that strong sense of autonomy that's so important for us to feel truly, truly motivated to learn.
So autonomy is the first aspect or pillar of motivation that we wanted to talk about. The second one is competence. And so this really just gets at this idea of feeling like we have the right skills and knowledge to be able to pursue what we're engaged in. So again, in the case of learning, what we're learning about. And this doesn't mean that it should all come necessarily easily, but it does mean that we need to feel that we have what it takes, even if it's a bit of a stretch, even if it's a bit of a challenge, to be able to undertake that learning. So that sense of competence and of really feeling like we can do what we need to do, that's incredibly important to motivation, because obviously it can be very demotivating if you're out of your depth and where you absolutely just can't do what's being asked of you. And it can also be very demotivating if you're in an environment where everything's too easy.
Yeah, and you know, I think we can certainly dig into this one a little bit more as we go along here. I think that's often a very tricky one for folks who are in the learning business. If you're responsible for, you know, facilitating, delivering learning experiences, because your learners tend to be all over the map. And you know, if you have a room full of people sitting in front of you, chances are that, you know, some of them are at a very high level, some of them are at a relatively low level. So, you know, being able to strike the right level of content and experience to serve learners across a range, I mean, that's an art and a science, and it can be very, very difficult to do. And we know that from our own experience, both in being learners and in helping to deliver learning. So autonomy, competence, and then the last one we'd phrase is connectedness. And this is the idea that, you know, you need to be able to connect what you're learning back to your life. You need to be able to connect it to others, to the community in which you live and which you work, and essentially to be able to draw meaning from whatever you're doing. And that, you know, if you're not able to feel that sense of connection back to your life, I think of this in terms of, you know, what Malcolm Knowles characterizes as relevance for the adult lifelong learner. Really, you know, feeling that sense of relevance, feeling that it connects back to work, feeling that you're engaged in something, you know, with others who may be in your field, in your profession, that you're participating in that kind of, you know, collective building of knowledge. You have to have that sense of connectedness in whatever you're doing. And again, you know, for us, that's going to be in the case of learning.
And because you mentioned Malcolm Knowles, I just want to point out here too that I think that DC's work around motivation is dovetails very nicely with what Malcolm Knowles is doing. And you think about one of the principles that you just highlighted, one around relevance, Jeff, but then there's another one where he points out that as a person matures, that the motivation to learn tends to become increasingly internal. So adults are typically more responsive to internal motivators, things like job satisfaction or self-esteem or quality of life, versus external motivators like higher salaries or job promotions. And I know we're going to dig into that more because that's obviously key to DC's work. But I just wanted to highlight that here because I'm sure many listeners will be familiar with Knowles's work. But, for this very reason, DC's work is equally important for those of us in the learning business.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we can start, dissecting all of these a bit more, getting into, again, we're not going to be able to get into all of the nuances and the details of this book and of the expansive research that DC himself, DC and Ryan have engaged in, but also a whole range of other researchers have engaged in. I mean, we do know quite a bit about motivation at this point, both in, with children in elementary learning situations, but also with adults, and unfortunately aren't leveraging that knowledge a lot of the time, which is one of the reasons we, really wanted to do this episode. But you just mentioned that internal versus external motivation. I think it, obviously incredibly important with adult learners, sometimes characterized as extrinsic motivation versus intrinsic motivation, or that, extrinsic control when we're talking about autonomy. So you may have things that are controlling you from the outside, basically. And, classic ones there are money, obviously, when you're trying to motivate people at work, maybe even trying to motivate them to participate in training, offering money as a reward, promotion, praise. I mean, praise is a very tricky one. And, we've touched on that before in talking about the work of Carol Dweck, for example, in mindset, and, having to be very careful about how you do praise people in order to not take motivation away. That sounds counterintuitive, but, you don't want people who are otherwise intrinsically motivated to suddenly be doing whatever they're doing simply for the sake of getting praise. And this can particularly happen in situations with kids and in learning, but it happens with adults as well. And then, of course, kind of along those lines, we've seen just a whole lot lately about things like, badges. And, of course, traditionally just earning credit in general, CEs, CEUs, tricky things. I mean, you can use them in appropriate ways, but those are forms of extrinsic motivation, extrinsic control, and you definitely have to be careful with them. And I think, if you're in the learning business, you certainly don't want your whole learning business to be built around CE, CEU, CPE, CME, name your C. I mean, we've made this point before, but, where we get that point from is from the work of somebody like DC. So, being very careful with extrinsic controls or extrinsic motivation.
Right. And so then intrinsic motivation is, just to make sure that folks understand, this is the kind of motivation that comes from within yourself, from, when we're talking about a learner, from within the learner herself. And so this is, satisfaction of a job well done or of something well learned. And I think one of the most interesting findings of DC's work and that of his colleagues is that intrinsic motivation is more effective than extrinsic motivation. And I think we all get that, right? If you believe within yourself, or if you get satisfaction from doing something internally, that's going to be a really big driver, much more so than, a badge that you may not really care about, for example. So that's one finding, but I think really the more interesting finding is that actually extrinsic motivation can erode intrinsic motivation. Mm-hmm. And that's what you were starting to talk about, right, Jeff, there, where we have to be careful about how we're using praise, or to the extent that if we're going to, promote the fact that this learning opportunity comes with, CE or with a micro badge, being careful to balance that with also appealing to what intrinsic motivation may be there for the learner. And so, where DC and his colleagues have gotten this is like they did a study where they actually set it up, in a lab. They had students come in and were working with these kind of little puzzles to do those. And they divided up the groups. They incentivized some of the students by paying them to solve these puzzles. But what they found out is that that group that had been paid to solve the puzzles were actually became less interested in working on the puzzles after they were being paid.
Mm.
And then in comparison, they had the control group, this group of students who hadn't been paid anything. They just were given this opportunity to work on the puzzles. And that group enjoyed working on the puzzles and continued to engage and had more fun with it than the group that had been paid. So, you know, that's where this, you know, finding that extrinsic motivation can actually erode intrinsic motivation comes from. And I know too, from a personal example, our son loves to read, but he absolutely hates the reading logs that he has to keep. And he's even said to me, you know, the logs ruin the reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and it's a shame to see that happen. And then, you know, at the same time, like we're saying, you do have to balance this because there are practical considerations sometimes, you know. And so, for example, we've run surveys in the past. We're about to run a survey right now and have to decide whether we're going to offer an incentive for that. And we'd like people to participate just because they think it's valuable to share this information, to get access to it themselves, to share it with others. But we also need people just to fill out the damn survey and to do it relatively quickly. You know, and in that case, you may have to use a little bit of extrinsic motivation, but you want to be thoughtful about it. You want to figure out, you know, when the gains that you're going to get from doing it actually outweigh whatever the negative consequences might be. And you'd called out a quote here that I'll read out from the book, and it goes, there is an aspect of intrinsic motivation that sets it quite apart from extrinsic control. It's an aspect that's almost spiritual. I like that word there, spiritual. It has to do with life itself. It is vitality, dedication, transcendence. It is what one experiences at those times that Robert Henry has called more than ordinary moments of existence. And we can relate that to what Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi calls flow, another great concept. You know, when you're really motivated, intrinsically motivated, you're really absorbed in the learning you're doing and the practice that you're doing, you enter this state that, you know, as DC has written here, is practically spiritual.
Well, right. And one of his points that he's making by calling it spiritual is that the act itself is sort of its own justification, that there's right. something about just the experience of that moment is worth the moment itself. It doesn't have to be, you know, for the purpose of anything or have a particular goal. And so, you know, that then in the context of learning brings us to the conclusion then that there is, with a certain type of learning, at least the learning that's freely entered into by the learner, that's truly intrinsically motivated, that experience is worthwhile just for itself.
Right. And I think, you know, yeah.
regardless of what comes from it. And I think this yeah. is such an important insight and to think about in the context of learning, because we get so focused on, okay, well, what's the ROI of this, you know, training course or this, you know, intervention that we're going to do to teach people, what, you know, what's the outcome? And I'm not saying that we should totally ignore the outcome. It's like you're saying, Jeff, we can't totally ignore the extrinsic, you know, influence that we may be able to have on learners and on learning. But it's also really important to just think about just this idea that it doesn't have to be the means to an end. It can just be an end in itself, learning.
Yeah, and we know folks are concerned about this. In fact, the first time we've written about DC and motivation in the past before, I think the first time we started really speaking about it like this, though, was last year, really earlier this year, the 2018 LTD, because the topic had come up around checkbox learning. Like people are, you know, engaging in education just to check the box. And this happens a lot with CE, CPE, CME-driven learning, you know, and dedicated learning professionals, learning leaders are concerned about this because we don't want people to just be checking the box. You know, we want them to be engaged at the level we've just been talking about. And, you know, there's no magic button to push to make that happen, but you have to understand this stuff that we're talking about right now, autonomy, competence, connectedness, to figure out how you can bring those out in a learning experience to hopefully, you know, get people to move beyond checkbox learning. And you'll have some who will just naturally do that anyway, but, you know, you're going to have a significant number who are just checking the box. And I should say, as an aside too, I'm realizing as we're talking about this that
we should do an episode at some point too on flow. We brought up that concept there with Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, whose name I finally mastered pronouncing. He's got a tricky name there. So now that I know how to pronounce it, we either need to do an episode about it on our own, or we need to see if we can actually get him to come on the show for an interview, because it dovetails very nicely with this whole area of motivation.
And so when I think about motivation and in the context of learning, I see that there's an intersection at least three points. So the first one is that is the point when a decision is made to engage in a learning experience. So this might be, you know, when someone decides to buy a course or decides to register for a conference or even decides just to carve out the time for self-study on a particular topic. And so, you know, here motivation can impact whether the individual decides to learn, you know, sort of whether to do it or not do it, what she decides to learn. You know, and I think this can fall a little bit into kind of, is it about just checking the box of something that has to be done, or is it really about more of a meaningful articulation of a goal? And then, of course, also which option a learner might choose from the array of options. So that's, you know, one point of intersection between motivation and learning. It's that decision is when the decision is made to engage in a learning experience.
And I think, you know, there's a clear connection here. We've talked about it many times before. You've written articles about it, I know, between education and marketing. And understanding that, you know, when you're marketing, you have to understand the motivation of the learner if you expect to actually get that learner's attention and convert that learner into a learner. So, you know, understanding motivation from the marketing perspective and then bringing that in, obviously, to the educational experience.
Absolutely. And so then the second point of intersection between motivation and learning is during the learning experience itself. So, you know, here we have a motivation determining how much attention the learner even gives to the experience, how invested she is in understanding what's being taught, and just how engaged she is in the activities that are being used to you know, deliver the knowledge or the skills or the information. So that's the second point during the learning experience. And then the third part would be applying the learning. I think we all know and agree that, you know, beyond the context of the learning experience itself, we want the learners to go out and actually do something with what they've learned. And so this is then where motivation impacts how well a learner applies what she's been taught, whether that's on the job or elsewhere in the, you know, quote, real world. Or even, frankly, you know, this is where the learner decides whether she's going to apply what she's learned at all.
Yeah, and this is something that we have obviously talked and written quite a bit about. This gets into impact, you know, and whether you're really going to move the dial with the learning that that you're offering. I mean, we all know, we've all experienced it ourselves where, you know, we're maybe sitting in a conference session or whatever it is, and we're pumped up at the end. You know, we're feeling, oh yeah, you know, great ideas here, great stuff. Then you get back to the office, you get back into real life, and it fades away. And you know, the motivation may still be latent there, but you know, we have to think as learning professionals, as learning leaders, how do we make it not just latent, but help keep bringing it to the surface? And, you know, in last year's LTD, we discussed practices like boosting, you know, following a learning event. And I think tying boosting into what's really going to be motivational for the learner so that she does apply on an ongoing basis. You know, a lot of what can be done with, you know, micro-learning, for example, could be used in this way to help keep that motivation at a level that the learner is going to be paying attention, so it doesn't just become latent and then fade away over time.
And so I think the interesting thing is that DC's work tells us that the more choice and the more kind of the more that the decisions at each of these three points, that decision to engage in learning, the participation in a learning experience, and then the application of the learning, the more that we as learning business professionals, those of us who provide learning opportunities, the more we can create conditions that foster intrinsic motivation at each of those points, then the more effective the learning is going to be. And that means the impact's going to be greater, as we were, you know, just talking about impact there. The more likely we're going to be able to actually move the needle for that individual learner, but also even more broadly for, you know, the field or the profession or the industry at large.
And this is, again, you know, one of those tricky areas we talked about, you know, balancing extrinsic and intrinsic in the first place. And, you know, with, in our view, the tilting more towards intrinsic and trying to find that intrinsic motivation. With choice, of course, there's got to be a balance too, because we know, you know, DC says, yeah, more choice is good. You have that sense of autonomy, you have that sense of control. But we also know from a lot of other research, I'm thinking like Barry Schwartz and people like that, that too much choice is bad. So, you know, it's part of our challenge, real challenge, as learning professionals, learning leaders, to figure out how to set context, to curate. We've talked about curation quite a bit recently and in the past as well. It's an ongoing theme. And to frame things in a way that, yes, the learner has choices, but you've made those choices, you know, rational and relevant, and, you know, put it into a context where they feel like they've got control, but you're not overwhelming them at the same time. And we all know that's a tall order. That's why this is a very challenging and important profession that we're in.
Well, and so you pointed out one challenge, which is this issue of balance. But the other trick is that, you know, we can't intrinsically motivate others.
Right, right.
I mean, that, you know, us as an outside force, you know, trying to make someone intrinsically think something else, that's an oxymoron or
right.
just outright impossible. And so, you know,
just try intrinsically motivating your kids to clean their rooms. you'll get the nature of this challenge, yes.
And so what we're left with is this challenge around creating conditions that foster intrinsic motivation. And that's, you know, pretty tricky. But luckily, you know, DC and with his work, he gets into some guidance around what it looks like to foster intrinsic motivation. And first up, I'll note that, you know, he talks a lot about people in one-up positions. And I like this because it puts a lot of relationships, a lot of different groups of people kind of mm-hmm. under one umbrella. So, you know, a one-up position might be a teacher vis-a-vis her students, or it might be a boss vis-a-vis her direct reports, or parents vis-a-vis their kids. And so all of those people, the teacher, the boss or manager, the parents, all of them are in one-up positions. And so, you know, what DC looked at a lot in his research and work is around what can people in one-up positions do to help foster or create that intrinsic motivation in the people in that one-down position. And, you know, the interesting thing here is that he gets into kind of a distinction between controlling behaviors and then what he calls autonomy supportive behaviors.
And so autonomy support means to relate to others, whether that's our children, our students, our employees, as human beings, as active agents who are worthy of support, rather than as objects to be manipulated for our own gratification. And of course, that means taking their perspective and seeing the world from their point of view as we relate to them. And of course, autonomy support may require more work, it usually does, but then that's our responsibility. We are socializing agents, basically, as people who are responsible for providing learning experiences. And, you know, for us to expect responsibility from others, which we certainly do want learners to step up and take responsibility. We've talked about that concept before. But if we're going to expect that to happen, we must accept our own responsibility as the agents of their socialization, of their learning, basically.
Yes. And so, you know, you gave us a definition of autonomy support that's still kind of highfalutin. It's sort of, you know, high-minded. This is what, it, you know, autonomy support, it means thinking about the other person's perspective, really genuinely understanding that. But luckily for us, DC gets even more specific about what autonomy support can look like in the context of specific situations. And again, this is based on some, you know, actual field work, actual research projects that they did. And he gets into at least three things that can help. And so the first one is to provide rationale. So in our context, when we're thinking about learning, making sure that the learner understands or is given, you know, resources to help her understand why she might need to learn this.
So providing rationale is one important aspect of autonomy support. And then another is to acknowledge that people might not want to do what they're being asked to do. Hard to believe, but yeah, sometimes we don't necessarily want to do what we're being asked. So for example, you know, while I love to learn, there are also downsides. You know, if nothing else, it's a demand on time and can thereby create stress at work, at home, or both. And I think this is something that we all see with the learners that we serve.
And then the third way to help provide autonomy support is to remember to invite rather than demand. So this is about the language and the style that you use. So when appealing to learners, when addressing them, you want to acknowledge as much as possible that the learner has a choice. So it really is more of an invitation rather than you must do this or you should do this.
And so I think, you know, that concept of autonomy support and those three, you know, ways to provide for autonomy support are, well, they're so important. I think that's probably good food for thought to take away from this episode of the podcast and to think about how you can do those three things and to think about everything else we've covered here. There's a lot more to this book. We said at the very beginning, we can't cover all of it. We really, really do emphatically recommend that you get your own copy of Why We Do What We Do, Understanding Self-Motivation by Edward Deci, and go through it, mark it up, and start implementing any of this that you're not implementing today. So with that, we'll wrap up this all-too-brief look into motivation. As usual, you can get show notes. All you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/episode162.
And when you check out the show notes, you're going to see options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of what you hear, and if you're not already a subscriber, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe, as those numbers are one way that we gauge the impact of this podcast. It's one way that we get motivated about doing this work.
And we're happy to accept that small dose of extrinsic motivation to see our numbers go up there. We are, of course, very intrinsically motivated to do this, or we wouldn't be sitting here doing it in the first place. We'd also be grateful if you take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever it is that you get your podcast, if that's Stitcher, if it's Google Podcasts, wherever. If it is on iTunes, all you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That'll put you in the right place. Salise and I personally appreciate your rating and review, but more importantly, reviews and ratings help the podcast to pop up whenever a learning professional, learning business leader is out there looking for topics like the ones we cover. So please do us and your learning business peers a favor and take time today to leave a rating and review for the Leading Learning Podcast.
And we'd be grateful if you would check out our sponsor for this episode, Learning Technology Design at ltd.tagoras.com. Again, this is our annual virtual conference. And if you, like most of our Leading Learning listeners, work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development, it is an event not to be missed.
Finally, please consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share, or if tweeting isn't your thing, just pick the social network or other medium of your preference and spread the good word.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.